All right, everybody worldwide, you're now tuned into Danger Vision, and I'm your host, Tom Danger. Back this week with a new guest, and we have the owner and founder of the high-end catering service platform, Soojin Kim of Include. Welcome.
Ooh, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Okay, so, you know, I said a whole lot in your name and high-end catering and so forth. So take me back to the beginning. Tell me about where you grew up, you know, the origin of your name and your favorite foods. That's a lot to do, but go.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, I had a rather unique upbringing. My father was a diplomat for the South Korean government. So I've lived in 5 continents throughout my upbringing, as throughout my career as well. And as a result, funnily enough, while I was growing up, I didn't really have a favorite food because we lived in these emerging countries.
Okay.
And food was actually pretty scarce.
Ah.
Flavors were pretty limited. So to give you an example, we lived in Nepal, which was my favorite country.
Okay.
We've tried some Nepalese food, but I was 8 years old, and there's not exactly many Nepalese restaurants.
Okay.
They were in Kathmandu, and then we lived in Libya.
Wow.
Again, not many restaurants, not where, you know, a girl of 9 or 10 years old can go out and enjoy. So we lived in some countries where Tang was like our favorite dessert. You know, the orange powder.
Oh, Tang. Yeah. We still use Tang to this day.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Tang still exists. Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah. Okay. Well,
listen, they probably only sell it in the hood, but don't tell nobody.
Oh, okay. I won't.
Go ahead.
I mean, growing up, I think one of the main common food we had in our pantry is probably peanut butter. So peanut butter on toast was actually one of my favorite things to eat while I was growing up. I was not a picky eater whatsoever.
Okay.
But just, you know, speaking of Nepal, the monkeys used to come into our kitchen and steal some of my breakfast. So it was, you know, fight for the peanut butter toast sometimes.
Okay.
And we ate at home a lot. You know, we also live in New Guinea, and we lived inside a hotel.
Okay.
At that time.
Yep.
A lot of the food that we consumed were continental, American, European style food that you would see in hotels even to this day.
Okay.
So having said that, but growing up, after I graduated from college, I lived in London and Singapore.
Okay.
And I gotta say, Singapore is probably hands down the best food in the world. It's a real melting pot of so many different flavors and cultures, and they're so inventive yet so authentic.
Okay.
And it's Malaysian and Indonesian food. If you're to ask me what is my absolute favorite cuisine, it's definitely Malaysian and Indonesian food, which are a little bit hard to get in New York City, but that's definitely my favorite cuisine.
Okay. So describe to us, when you talk about Malaysian and Indonesian cuisine, what would a typical lunch or dinner, what would you have?
Yeah, you know, it's such a big variety, but there is a lot of rice and noodle-based dish. I think the easiest way for me to describe it is, you know, take a really good Thai restaurant in New York, just add a lot more spices to it, more seafood, and I can't quite put my finger on some of the flavors. There's a dish called rendang beef.
Okay.
And I think it's Indonesian. It looks like curried beef, but it's pulled, it's like kind of like pulled pork or pulled beef, so it sort of just melts in your tongue. And the sauce has a bit of peanut in it as well, and I just love that stuff. They used to serve rendang hamburgers at Burger King in Singapore.
Really?
And, yeah, so flavors like that I really miss. And there's a thing called laksa noodle. and I believe that's Malaysian. It's coconut. It's the best way to describe it is coconut curry soup, but it's very spicy.
Okay.
And with noodles and seafood in it. So that's sort of the example.
Okay. So what made you pick Columbia as a business school to attend?
Well, the funny story is I wanted to go to business school while I was still working. I was working at American Express then, and I wanted to go to either NYU or Columbia.
Okay.
And my GMAT score had actually technically expired, or was really pushing close to expiration date. I called, and my GMAT score was decent.
Okay.
And I called NYU, and NYU said, we can't accept that score date.
Wow.
Okay. So, and then I called Columbia, and Columbia was like, sure, we'll accept that score date.
Okay.
So by default, yes, it was Columbia, but I did attend both info sessions. And there's at least where I felt most comfortable and where I walked up saying, this is where my future education is going to be. It was definitely Columbia, like hands down.
So you managed to fulfill your master's degree while working full time?
I did the, was it every other Friday and Saturday program at Columbia?
Okay.
It's a part-time and executive MBA. It's brutal. It's from 8:30 in the morning until 6:30 at night.
Wow.
Yeah, you really can't feel your butt at the end of the day, I can tell you that. And I rediscovered my love of Red Bulls. But, and then you are working full-time. And I worked at a credit card company during the credit crisis.
So with, you know, the job and studying, when do you find time to create this company? Or what sparked the idea for this company?
Most people ask, did you get the, which one came first, the idea or the passion to be an entrepreneur?
Okay.
And for me, it was definitely the passion.
Okay.
And I went through about 6 or 8 different ideas. I mean, one of my ideas was like this joint fork and spoon holder, you know, like a tong.
Okay.
But one is a fork, one left side is a fork, the right side is a spoon. I don't know. Or like it was, I had a lot of crazy ideas. I had a nanny certification school idea, and a lot of people told me to don't quit my day job because the ideas were terrible. So I stumbled upon Include. The idea for what Include is now is when one of my classmates asked for my help to find her a private venue in Midtown East.
Okay.
For 100 of her salespeople. And I just happened to live very close to her, so I was like, yeah, sure, I can find you something. And I realized it's really not that easy to find a venue that's a great quality, that's in a certain location, that fits the capacity and the price point, because my friend worked at a pharmaceutical company.
Okay.
And they come with very rigid budget criteria and how much they can spend per person. So ensued so many site visits, so many phone calls. I mean, the math was confusing. So I realized, you know, this was a no-brainer. Here's a, you know, open table for corporate events.
Yes.
Or private venues. And you mentioned high-end catering in the beginning, but that was part two. So part one, we started up as a website, just listing all the private rooms available for hire for parties in New York City. And I honestly thought that was it. That's all I have to do.
Okay.
I flipped the event industry's business model on its head by, instead of charging the users, i.e. the people looking for the space, I charge the venues.
Okay.
Because private events are extremely lucrative. I've learned that it can make up to 30% to 50% of a restaurant's profit, even if it's just, you know, a room in the corner or the back of the house. So, you know, venues and vendors were ready to give us a cut for bringing the lead.
Okay.
And so that's how I got the idea. But that idea came after many other ideas I explored and thought of. And I had a different idea for Include when I actually first started out, and that was a bust. And okay. The best advice I ever got and was from a professor, again, at Columbia. he told me, test every idea without spending a dime.
Yes.
And I, honest to God, think that was the best idea anyone can ever hear, because I know a lot of people who have spent up to $250,000, even $500,000, before they even have their first customers.
Wow.
Just building the infrastructure. We're just talking about a website, by the way.
Right.
Website with some, you know, analytical machines, algorithms, and then I have friends who spent 6-7 years trying to get various ideas off the ground, but you know, they have to perfect it, so they can't just go into the market and test it.
Right.
They were so afraid to just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your cost constraint, your of starting is zero, and it's just sweat equity, you are more willing to just give it a go. So definitely I kept my pilot idea very basic, very simple, and that's how we started. And you know, the way I left American Express was, I mean, I was dying to start something, so
okay.
That was always there. But I loved my job at Amex. Towards the last 2 years, I think it was, and by this point I'd graduated from Columbia, it was, I really loved my job. I was running a nationwide sales, field sales channel. Loved my boss, loved the people I worked with, and it was hard for me to leave, but I really, really wanted to start something. I piloted the idea of Include. After I had, by the way, I taught myself web programming, 5 different languages.
Wow.
Front end and back end. Because I was obsessed. I mean, I would work until 8 p.m. at night at work, and I'd be home by, I'm sorry, I work until 7 or 7:30 at night. I'd be home by 8:30 or 9. I'll eat dinner, and then I'm literally on my computer reading through a 600-page coding book and practicing. And that was for about almost a year. Every night I did that. I was obsessed. But then I did that for a while, and then I piloted the idea, and actually the pilot was a bit accidental. One of my friends gave me, another lead. So the pharmaceutical friend I mentioned was 2 years before I launched. A year or two years before I launched. And then I started taught myself web programming. And then one of my other friends was also a classmate from business school, and she's actually a doctor at Columbia Medical University.
Wow.
Gave me my first lead.
Okay.
And she's like, just go and find us a venue. And that took me 2 weeks to do.
And walk us through that. Walk us through, you go into that venue, what's going through your mind? What do you say? Break it down.
Oh, yes, love it. So I walk into the venue, I try to look as professional as I can because it is the hospitality industry.
Okay.
I went into the restaurant, I spoke with a front of desk, and this is a small enough restaurant in Hell's Kitchen that the private event was managed directly by the owner. So the owner comes out. And so I speak to the owner. I had a business card, by the way, so definitely walk in with a business card.
Okay.
Anything that makes you look like a legit storefront.
Right. Okay.
That makes sense. Walk in, so I was professionally dressed. I had the event criteria all laid out. I had a business card, and I said, I'm a corporate, from a corporate event planning company. The customer wants this, and my fee is this. My fee is XYZ. If you would like for me to refer your venue to the client, luckily, because this business model isn't entirely new in the hospitality industry. Like travel agents charge venues
right.
A lead generation fee, and it wasn't entirely new for the restaurants either. So he looked at me, pondered a while, looked at me up and down, and said, okay, fine.
Just like that.
Just like that. So, and inside I was jumping up and down. The outside I acted like that was nothing. I was like, there was nothing new.
Okay. Kept you cool.
And, you know, I kept my cool. I definitely kept my cool. And if anything, he actually offered me a job as well, because he said, listen, if this is what you do, can you take over all the private events of my restaurant? I'm looking for someone to manage all the private events. and you will get, I think the amount he offered was 5 to 7% of the cut, which is on the low side. So I remember looking at him and thinking, wow, how do I respond to this? I don't know how to respond to that. And I said, I'll think about it. But, you know, my passion was to scale beyond one restaurant. And not to say, I was still working at Amex at that point. I still had a rigorous day job to tend to. So, but yeah, that was my first meeting. And then I went to the client and I said, here are 3 or 4 options. And they chose one. Okay. And that was it, and it was a success. And but the one thing is, I came from a sales channel. I came from a B2B sales channel, so I think I had the grit to ask for money, okay. Which is something that's hard to do. The hardest thing to do is ask for money. And the reason why I say that is, a lot of people offer free stuff as their first sale and their first customer. And I always say no to that. I always say charge something, because the most important thing you're going to learn when you're very small and you're in the pilot stage is price sensitivity.
Okay.
And I made that rule up in my head, and I'm so glad I did, because my price went up. Like, and let me tell you that. And I'm so glad it went up, because I don't know if I could have sustained okay. the business. I did not.
Now, you didn't tell us about how you came up with the company name.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Originally, the concept include was for a business that was meant for a private membership, a members-only restaurant club.
Okay.
So the idea was, my very, 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 very first idea, one of the 9 ideas that got nixed, was introducing special offers from brand-new restaurants to members. And that was too hard to do, because I had to create the events and then find members and so forth. So the reason why I'm mentioning this, because it was all about feeling included and feeling clued in. And I was walking across Brooklyn Bridge, and I was like, what's the name? It has to be like LinkedIn. I'm like, okay, in link, clued in. Oh, include. I swear to God, I remember it hit me just as I was walking across Brooklyn Bridge. So include was for that initial idea. And then what happened was, when I actually got the private venue idea, I was actually going to call it 10seatsormore.com. That was going to be another business name,
okay.
The new business name, 10 Seats or More. But what happened was, one, I realized, oh, my God, this takes so long to type out 10seatsormore.com,
right.
If you try to type it on a website. But I was talking to my friends about it, a lot of my Columbia classmates, and nobody remembered 10 Seats or More. Everybody kept coming back and asking me, how's Include doing? Do you have Include start up and running?
Okay.
Every single person remembered the name Include, so I went back to the name Include.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so the name is name has stuck. And then my cousin, who is a professional photographer in the fashion industry, very talented. I told him, I was like, look, can you make this look a little bit prettier? Because my initial logo looked very bad.
Right.
And he said, you know what? This is like a new word. You got to make it look like it's a word that you find in a dictionary. And he designed it. It's like exactly with a dot in the middle, the color scheme. Well, I forgot. I think the color scheme might have come from my website designer. But yeah, so that's even something like a name, it has a story.
Okay. So, you know, you told us about when you got your first client and, you know, how the name came about. Talk to us about once the business starts to go to scale, right? And once it starts to go to scale, some of the pitfalls that you ran into.
Oh, where do I start? The biggest pitfall with any scaling is quality deterioration.
Okay.
And that is particularly tricky in hospitality, because especially in New York City, in a competitive market like New York, if your quality is a miss, your clients will not come back to you.
Right.
Even if it's like a little bit. So something turns them off. They're like, nah, don't know you, and they won't come back to you. So the only way I could scale without adding heavy investment and expenditure and infrastructure and resources, was to zero into certain industry verticals. Industry verticals where events are going to reoccur. They're larger in total size, okay, and the needs are much easier to meet. So, for instance, you know, a two-hour wine, beer reception with simple past hors d'oeuvres, and I'm speaking from a catering perspective, that's very easy to do. That's, you know, we have a set menu for that. We get the permit, we get the insurance, and it's in a building that we used to do. That takes us no time. Yeah, we execute and so forth. Versus a wedding, where every new client is, you got to start from beginning.
Gotcha.
So we looked into very much zeroing into corporate events. We have stopped taking, at least in the interim, requests for weddings.
Okay.
We're pretty much filled up in wedding. We're not going to do anymore. And we, the other way to scale, and this comes, this is what I tell a lot of entrepreneurs, you can either try to find new clients or you can cross-sell something else to your existing clients.
Right.
So, meaning we had clients who were already using our venue sourcing service. I can go try to find new clients for new venue sourcing, or I can go back to the existing clients and say, you know what, we do catering too now. Do you want catering? And that actually is what allowed us to double in business much quicker and also create a stickiness with our clients, because then we became a one-stop shop. So they can celebrate in the office or out of the office. So it was focusing on the larger events, on the corporate events, and then also cross-selling rather than focusing on brand new acquisitions.
So how do you handle that client that's extremely difficult? You know, you found the perfect venue, you know, you've done a tasting, everything is on par, and the decor is perfect, you have the lighting, the DJ, and they still look at it and go, this is crap.
Right. So luckily we haven't had many of those, but I'd be lying if I said, and this is not with our venue sourcing. Our venue sourcing has pretty much been, you know, fully satisfied by all of our customers. It comes with catering.
Yes.
And event planning and weddings especially.
Okay.
So in those instances, you have to listen to the client's feedback. They should feel welcome to provide any feedback that they feel is necessary. You have to take it as a learning, but you also have to be very upfront about why it didn't take place the way they envisioned it. So, for instance, I'm trying to think of one right now. Right. So there was a client who said not enough food was passed around during the cocktail hour.
Right.
And then some of the guests noticed that the food was not being passed around. I was unfortunately at another part of the room when the cocktail hour was happening, setting up for another part of the evening. So I missed the cocktail hour, but I did walk through it, and I remember thinking, this space is too small for the number of guests. And so it was very crowded. And I knew that was a risk, and so did the client. The floor plan they proceeded with was not what I advised them on. So as a result, I do remember seeing a lot of staff and a lot of food coming out of the kitchen, but the staff couldn't quite make it probably to the far end of the room because there's so many.
Right.
So I take my stand, and plus if it's a staff and a group of staff I've worked with in the past, I have to stand by them to a certain extent, so I try to explain to them logistically what went wrong and why it couldn't happen and what I saw. However, if they're very discontent about it, then, you know, obviously, again, in the hospitality industry, you do have to offer some sort of, here is something to make up for your troubles.
Right.
It's just sort of a given in the hospitality industry. But I try my best to never get defensive. I made that one mistake, I'll be very honest, one mistake very early on with a very belligerent client, outwardly just rude.
Right.
Outwardly rude. I can't even explain it. I won't go into detail.
Okay.
And with that client, I basically did say, we do not wish to have been do business with you in the future.
Wow.
And yeah, I didn't think I would have said that. This was like 1 year in. But she was so belligerent and so belittling of my staff, of me, and of my restaurant staff, and outright lies as well. So, but now I wish what I had done is kept my mouth shut.
Okay.
Go back in the first year, let her tell me how I could have done it differently, or how the restaurant could have done it differently, or how the catering could have done differently. Thank her for the feedback that we could rectify, and then still stand by the fact that, you know, that what you are blaming us for actually did not happen, and still state the fact, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. So what do you look for when you're picking venues?
Oh, God, I mean, a variety. First is location.
Okay.
Location is the number one request from clients. Then is the ease of access. How easy is it to get to the private room? How easy is it to get inside the restaurant? Because some restaurants are like inside a corporate building.
Right.
And you can't find it. Another thing is privacy. How private is it? Restaurants will say it's a private room, and then you show up and there's no door.
Wow.
That's not private. You can hear the next door, the party next door. The layout, how close they are to other private rooms, so how quiet it is. Quiet is actually a big request for the client, too. And then, the price as well.
Right.
We've seen enough pricing to know what's fair and what's not, given the restaurant reputation and the location and so forth. And then it's the vibe. So the science comes before the art. If the science works, then the art looks beautiful.
Okay.
Then the decor.
Got you. So as far as food quality, that comes after, mm-hmm. after you look at the space.
Well, we wouldn't go to any venue where if we... So we also look at the reviews of the restaurant.
Okay.
Oh, definitely. Reviews of the venue and reviews of the restaurant.
So when you talk but when you talk about reviews, what type of sites or where are you looking at the reviews? Are you looking at Yelp? Are you looking at Google reviews? Like, what is your go-to source? Are you looking at Zagat? Like, what are you looking at exactly?
Oh, so we do look at Yelp and Foursquare and Google.
Okay.
They don't really speak about the private event experience in the venue.
Right.
They speak mainly about the individual meals, and private events menus are very different than what the rest of the restaurant gets served.
Okay.
And that's because certain cuisines just can't be made in batches, you know, the pasta, certain pasta gets stuck to one another, et cetera, et cetera. So after we looked at, but Yelp and Foursquare and Google, what it does is gives us an idea about the reputation of the place.
Gotcha.
And so if we recommend it to a client that has stellar reputation and branding, as in it could be hot and new, or it could just, you know, have a celebrity name attached to it, then half of our selling is done right there.
I guess one of the biggest questions that I'd like the listeners to walk away from this interview, in which they could learn from you, is what drives you? What motivates
right.
you? What gives you the confidence to wake up every day and say, this is what I want to do, I'm going to go for it, even when, like you started out by saying, this has been one of those days. Even when you have one of those days, what pushes
right.
you?
I'll tell you why I left corporate, and it was because I have this huge passion to meet a need in the marketplace.
Okay.
That's what I'm passionate about. That's what drives me. I want to deliver a solution to a true need. It's always, I always love looking at problems, like, why isn't someone doing about this?
Okay.
And it's not always philanthropical, it's not, you know, socially do good. It's for me, it's just the need. It's the why not. And that's, and I, you know, when I started the business, I knew that I would get so ingrained the day to day that I might forget what my vision was. And so I remember I wrote out this thing called a suspension of disbelief statement. And my vision is that the company will be this because it would solve this need.
Okay.
And I've never left my eye on that vision statement. It's like a mission statement, I guess, more
okay.
like that.
Okay.
But I'm committed to actually solving a need, and Include actually does meet a need that was in the marketplace. So that's what I'm most thrilled about. But that's what really drives me.
Sounds good. You're feeling down. You're looking for that one meal that always makes you feel good no matter what mood you're in. No matter, you know, when you just feel like crap and you know, like, I can get this meal at this place. Where is it and what are you eating?
You know, I love burgers, so I'm going to say Umami Burgers.
Really?
They are very good, especially the Manly. I think it has like a bacon, a pork belly, and some crispy onion rings. What are they called? There's a tiny onion rings inside the burger.
Okay.
And we serve them at events, and they're always gone.
Nice.
Always gone. Not a single one left.
Nice.
And I would say that
very
is
cool.
My comfort food.
Very cool. Yeah. So what's next for Include?
What is next for Include? Well, as Mama Include is concerned, she's going to open up a bottle of wine and have with a friend.
Ditto.
It's the next is for me to further refine our focus.
Okay.
I'm getting more and more focused into what we do, what we say yes to and what we say no to. We've been saying a lot more no's than yeses lately.
Okay.
And then really scaling up one of our services, which is the hotel room sourcing.
Oh, really?
Yes, that is a wise man has once told me, if you're going to look at restaurants, look at conference spaces, and look at hotel rooms, that wise man was very, very wise.
Ah, interesting, very interesting.
2 years since that feedback, we're very much ready to get that
okay.
Up and running. I think it's time we go big. I think we have, I finally feel like I'm standing on a firm foundation.
Okay.
And fundamentals. We turned five, by the way. Oh my God, this podcast came at this perfect time. We turned 5 years old on Monday.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Thank you very much.
Would you ever go back to corporate?
Oh God. You never say never, but at this point, I really like being able to have an idea and just do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and you know, it's very, one of the things I learned as an entrepreneur is how empowering it is to know that everything you do is your choice.
Right.
And it always has been, but when you're in corporate, you feel like you don't have a choice but to do this meeting, but to do that project. But we always have choices, and so it's not my first preference. I would like to continue to scale, grow, strengthen, Include.
Gotcha.
But never say never. Yep.
Very cool. So, Jen, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and taking time to share your story with us, and we wish you nothing but more success.
Thank you very much. It was such a pleasure
Speaking
to you, Tommy Danger.
Very cool.